Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You're listening to the Unsung Podcast, where we talk about classic albums and decide if they deserve that distinction. And we also talk about some unsung classics in the hopes of bringing them to a new audience. And at the end of it all, we let you decide if we are right or wrong. This is the Unsung Podcast. Before we move on to this episode, we just need to do a little bit of housekeeping. So on the last episode, we discussed Depeche Mode's 1990 record, Violator. So as ever, we put it up to the public vote, and the public decided that yes, this would be added to our discography of all-time great records, which is amazing because that now makes it the second record in our discography. So that joins Jane Doe by Converge as one of our all-time classic records as decided by you, the public. Thank you very much to everybody that listened and voted. We really appreciate it. On this episode, we talk about Introducing by DJ Shadow.
Producing.
From listening to records, I just knew what to do.
Hi, I'm your host Mark Fraser, otherwise known as The Curator, and I'm joined today by two lovely gentlemen.
Hi, to my right is Christopher Cusack. He's the only man I've seen today with his self-prepared gin and tonic salad. I have to say I'm very impressed. Big, nice plastic cup you've got there.
It's one of my five a day.
One of your five a day. All four slices of cucumber. Have you matched the gin to the dressing?
Bombay Sapphire.
Bombay Sapphire. Mm. I thought Bombay Sapphire was a lemon garnish.
Bombay Sapphire.
Oh, I think you've gone wrong.
No, I don't know. Is it?
You've got to match the gin to the garnish.
Yeah, I thought that was a cucumber one. No,
I think Hendrix is the only one I know that's a cucumber.
Is that right?
Alas. Anyway, hi, Chris.
Maybe that's why I'm having such an awful time. Or maybe it's your attitude. To my left is David Weaver. David John Weaver. The only man that when he orders a small wine, he just means a normal sized bottle.
Yeah, I won't have a box. I'll just have a.
I'm going to bring you a straw next time.
That would be nice. A curly straw.
Save you the calories on lifting that arm. Shall we?
Yeah, we shall. So, in this episode, we're talking about Introducing by DJ Shadow, which I believe was David's pick.
It was indeed.
Why?
I'm surprised that neither of you were that into it. Like, I thought it was a sort of genre spanning sort of classic for fans of loads of shit.
Haven't read about it. Yeah. I think you're right in that belief. Aye. It's weird ignorance.
Aye. So, I mean, I was playing a gig when I was 17 with my band who sounded like a cross between Finch and Thrice.
Is this a band that's done a cover of almost everything I mention every week?
Yeah, pretty much. And we were playing in a hotel in the Highlands. This gig that we put on. And
then started a really good horror film.
Aye. And then the DJ was playing this track that I think I kind of recognised, but I just didn't know what it was. It was and then I went up and asked him, and he said it was Organ Donor, like the extended cut by DJ Shadow.
You kind of swished your fringe to one side.
And like, yeah, I was 17. I was into, you know, everything that I was into when I was 17. Mm-hmm. The only sort of electronic music that I knew was like, I don't know, Chemical Brothers and The Prodigy and
Did
stuff.
You say Finch and Thrice? Because after you said that, I just heard thrush. I'm sure it started with a TH, but there was a bird, thrush. Yeah. Must have been the emo band Thrush.
Weeping from crying eyes.
I love this record. I have the extended edition on CD. Mm-hmm. I really love this album. So I was.
It wasn't
something that came into my mind to ever be contentious for this podcast. But it makes sense because it's a fucking great album. Like, I really like it.
Yeah.
So this is kind of handy, right? Because I'm
the newbie.
Yeah, I'm the newbie here, and I'm very much kind of like, I had to go away and really do homework in this and sort of try and get familiar with it. There's some interesting angles, having talked to other people that have listened to it already and been like, and they're telling me they're taking it and I'm seeing it from a whole other point of view. I'll get to that anyway. The point being, I think without having heard it, I don't know why, and I'm maybe alone here, but I for some reason had associated it with people like Swearpusher and even some of the Aphex Twin stuff. I hadn't done, you know, my due diligence to try and work out if this music was actually comparable to that, and it's not, I don't think. But I don't know why I'd assumed it was. I think I actually assumed it was a bit harder and a bit edgier than it is, that's why I kind of mentally had put it in that box without having actually ever taken the time to listen to it.
Yeah. Well, interestingly enough, it gets marked down as a hip hop record.
Mm. Yeah, I noticed that.
Electronic.
Well, trip hop.
Right? It's a trip hop record, I'd say. Yeah.
In terms of sound, I would, you know, I'd classify it as trip hop or electronic.
I read a quote that described it as trip hop's crowning achievement. Yeah. It was like one of the, like his previous EP, was it called Influx or something? Mm. Was the one that was credited as being the arrival of the trip-hop genre, at least based on stuff I was reading.
Yeah, because it was released on Moax, which, like, it was released in the UK, and it was a big hit in the UK, and I remember reading that he went back home to California, and he was, like, really surprised that nobody had picked up on it in America.
That's right,
I
read that as well.
Kind of shocked, and that's really weird for me, because I guess trip-hop's a big thing in the UK, though, do you know what I mean? Mass Attack and all that, and...
Yeah, that genre sort of was built in, you know, Bristol, and that sort of scene... At the same time as, you know, things like that were happening in the States.
Portishead and stuff would have been coming at that time, I saw as well that in the States it took a lot longer for him to catch on, and it charted a lot higher in the UK than it did in the States as well.
I think it went gold in the UK, didn't it?
I think so. It charted at number 17, which was reasonably high.
So what was your take on the record then?
Okay.
Because we've both said we really like it, so...
Yeah. I can't say I like it. Bearing in mind though that I've only just started listening to it, and I do think it's like, it's obviously highly enough spoken about that it merits, you know, going back to it to try and get a bit more out of it. I think, and this is a conversation I've been having this week actually, because I played this to my flatmate who also hadn't listened to it, and he's a guy whose taste I really trust, and he really liked it. He was like, wow man, I'm really glad you've been doing this, because this is great. And I was like, alright, cool. So I'm, you know, seeing firsthand that it, even now it's got some relevance. It's, you know, even now it's, you know, definitely got some longevity. I think the problem for me, and I may be slightly biased on it, I can't explain why, is that this was also credited. There was a really good quote. Hang on, 2 seconds. I've got it noted down here. It was a quote about how this had, so I think it was the AV Club, said that the impact of the album, quote, had partially been diluted by the symphonic beat collage culture it helped spawn. And I think that's what ruins this for me, right? Because I hear the album and I can tell that it was innovative at the time. I can see that, I can read it, I can see all the testimony to that effect. All I hear, though, is the 10 years of, like, sort of sample-y music that came off the back of it that is, like, the backing noise and really boring bars. I mean, I used to work in, you remember the place that we ran in Glasgow, me and Ian ran a venue.
Yeah.
A couple of total wankers that ran this place, and their idea of music in the bar was to put on this music that was just these two guys that owned it, that still own a bar in Glasgow, by the way, and so if you want to hear this music, you can go down and check it out. But like these guys, their idea of putting on background music was just this kind of weird, soulless, bland sort of trip hop stuff with these like slightly jazzy diminished chords that really went nowhere, and there was no real hook. It was just sort of like percussion with bits of melody. And unfortunately for me, it sounds like it, albeit maybe slightly diluted, but it sounds a lot like this to me. And so I'm kind of retrospectively judging this as going, so you're the prick that started all this. And that's kind of the thing. I'm like, I'm hearing where...
But that can be said for so many different albums, though. Maybe you just haven't had enough time with this one for it to, like...
But that's actually my next point. It got me thinking, right? Because as we both know, I'm a fan of Faith No More.
Yeah.
And few bands are more responsible for the aberration that was new metal than Faith No More. And so do you judge them retrospectively based on what they created? But the problem is, if you miss it at the time, see, I got Faith No More at the time, so I liked them.
Yeah.
And I didn't hold them entirely responsible for that shit. But having missed this at the time, going back to it, all I can hear is this in reference to all this garbage that just, you know, it's another thing. I was like, who actually produces that music? Who actually produces that tedious backwash that's in all these places? And like, and it, some of that apparently is producers who actually realise they can make more money just selling that shit.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then pursue their own projects elsewhere. But it's awful. I mean, it's just filler. It's just like this glut of stuff that's out there taking up time and on personal sound systems in various places. And it's just, I can't really get away from that when I'm listening to this album. And I know that's unfair in this album, but you know, yeah, ask me for my honest opinion, I'm afraid.
There's three things that I can take away from what you just said there. Is like, the first one is when you talk about this being like music in bars, whenever I hear this, and I can't help it either, immediately, this is a very specific reference, but you guys will no doubt understand it. It makes me think of the Beer Hall. Immediately.
Funnily enough,
that's what it makes me think
I
of.
I was talking about a couple of wankers earlier.
And that's exactly what I expect when I hear this record. Secondly, so you're talking about...
That's uncanny.
That's uncanny. I mean, there's a lot of bars in Glasgow and he nailed it.
Genuinely, folks, there were no visual cues there.
There was not.
My look of surprise when he just said that. But anyway,
another thing is, you've hit upon something which I think, not only I find quite difficult, but I think a lot of people find quite difficult. And that's removing yourself from the present context to think about it in the context of when it was released. And the biggest example of that for me is when I started listening to Led Zeppelin. I was like, I don't understand why this is such a big deal. But it takes you a while to understand what, hang on. It was the first iteration of this kind of thing. Nobody'd done it before.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it's like, doesn't mean you see people haven't perfected it and done it better now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, I think a record that we're going to be doing in the next couple of weeks is actually responsible for so much terrible music.
No question.
But, you know, it's also responsible for a lot of great music, and it is itself. Well, we'll discuss it.
I realise what you mean, yeah.
I think this album's also responsible for a lot of really, you know, inspiring a lot of really incredible stuff as well. You know, stuff like, you know, bands like Bonobo and Cinematic Orchestra have taken that sort of... Mm-hmm. Sort of analog warmth of this record and the sort of post-rock elements as well, and you know, built upon that, and that's, you know, something like I go back to is that with this record is that it's not a hip-hop record, it's not an electronic record, it's all of these things, and yeah, it's got that sort of, even though everything's sampled, it feels kind of live and it feels like, you know,
feels so organic.
Yeah, it feels so organic and warm.
Played as well.
Yeah, exactly.
He did play it. I mean, I was reading a bit about that because he used really minimal amount of tech for this. Mm. You know, it was just like,
and it was
Akai MPC 60, I think, was his main thing. And as somebody who uses an MPC 1000, not the same, but they're amazing. And I can see how, you know, they can just, the possibilities when you're using them are astonishing. So it must have been pretty amazing for him to actually really go down that rabbit hole of like, let's see what I can do with just this minimal array of stuff and time, because it took him 2 years as well, apparently. You know, he was just like, was it bin diving, you know, like to get all these records? That's what the picture is in the cover, apparently. It's like him,
yeah,
you know,
it's just his favorite record store
vinyls. Yeah,
I mean, I think that album cover, like, is one of those beautiful ones that just totally defines the record, because it's you know, it's blurry, it's warm, it's analog, it's just guys looking at records at nighttime. You know, like, I remember coming down to Glasgow when I was like 7 or 8 with my parents and going in, like, a night out would be going to the Big Tower Records and just like spending the night in Tower Records. And like, I we'd do that like once a year, and I'd look forward to it because it was just amazing.
You know, I was in that building 2 years ago after it. Now it's really? Like sitting there empty. Yeah, me and John went in to have a look inside it and
just have a wee,
just to have a wee nosy, man. It's absolutely fascinating. Honestly, just going around all
the stuff's still there. Like
there's bits and bobs of stuff inside it. It's just like a total ghost town. It really is, because you can remember being in it, like you say, for hours at a time.
Yeah.
Now you're in it and it's like really shuttered in darkness and there's like pigeons flying out the road and stuff.
Oh,
it's
man.
Really trippy. Hmm. Really, really trippy.
But there's something just amazing about like spending a night in an amazing record store. And I think that's what this album is. Like to a lot of people. It's like, and even like there's like some records that are more explicit with it. Like for instance, remember after Fat the Land, the Prodigy or Liam Howlett released the Dirt Chamber Sessions, which was like an album of the Prodigy's influences, and I think it was supposed to be a series, but he only ever released one, and I got that, and it was actually really amazing because it was just samples and like chunks of songs, everything from like Public Enemy to Sex Pistols to like punk dance electronica. And I just went through the sample list and like found loads and loads and loads of new music. And although this one is kind of built more to be its own thing, it's also like just something that's really nice to get lost in. And then
it's a very, very cool sample in it.
Yeah.
I'll give it that. Like there's some really interesting, was it Metallica in it?
Bjorn. Yeah, yeah, Orion.
Kraftwerk.
Roger Waters is on it.
And some of the bits in the middle and at the end as well. Was it the giant from Twin Peaks that finishes it?
Yeah.
Seeing it's happening again.
Yeah.
And Prince of Darkness as well, that movie, that's the kind of in-between tracks thing.
Yeah.
That's a great film. Like,
yeah.
Really, really cool. I mean, yeah, it gets points for, you know, kind of kitsch sort of cool name dropping in that sense, I guess.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hi folks, it's Mark here. I just thought I'd jump in right here. I know it's right in the middle and I'm sorry for breaking up the conversation, but I just thought I'd jump in to say, if you enjoy this podcast, you can donate. Now, I know you maybe listen to quite a lot of podcasts who ask you to donate some money. At this moment in time, we are running this podcast just out of the goodness of our own hearts. And we love doing it. We love doing this podcast. We think it's awesome. But any money that you could maybe spare to give to us to fund this podcast would be a huge weight off our shoulders. We want to keep making this podcast. We enjoy making this podcast, but it costs us money to host audio, to pay for websites, you know, all that kind of thing. So if you're so inclined, you can head on over to www.unsungpod.net/donate. And if you go over there, you can donate some money to our podcast. Now, you can do it on a monthly basis, or you can do it just on a one-off basis if you want. But any and all contributions are appreciated, no matter how big or how small. All the money that you can give us will help us to keep the lights on and keep the seats warm. And now, let's get back to this episode.
I think for me, and I think for a lot of people, it was just an album that you could totally get lost in. And I found it in my first year at university. And you've been to Stirling University Halls.
Mm, yes.
Little tiny dungeons. So
the ones that weren't burnt down,
aye, exactly. So like for me, I ended up just taking like three CDs to uni, And that was one of them.
Just like when you DJ now.
Yeah, exactly. I know. Two Pantera CDs.
And Miley Cyrus.
Aye. And then, but like just, you know, getting used to being on your own, living out away from your parents, living in this little dark dungeon. And that was just like a nice little...
Can I ask, see, have you seen, because, so just before we lose track of it, have you seen Scratch?
No.
Right, so there's a documentary called Scratch, I think it was like, came out in 2001, something around that. And it's got footage of him, you know, sourcing the records and the process he went through and stuff. And apparently,
yeah, I've never watched it. I've never watched it.
It's a total enthusiast's thing. It's probably pretty good.
I was going to say as well, I think one of the reasons you might struggle with this and one of the reasons I struggle with it is because this is the default hip-hop sound now. If you have no ideas for creating a hip-hop track, you usually do something like this.
Well, I'm the whitest guy in the room, so I've got no ideas for anything to do with hip-hop.
Yeah.
Like, if you go and see any local hip-hop acts or of any kind or any small hip-hop acts, they don't really have...
Yeah, they aren't doing, like, trap stuff, but, like, the more sort of classic hip-hop...
They don't have an ounce of innovation, basically. They use samples that just sound like... this shit.
Like, acoustic guitars, like, smooth sort of trippy beats.
It's so emulated, it's frightening.
Yeah.
It really is.
Mm. I can believe that, I guess. I just think, unfortunately... aspects of it that seem to be emulated a lot as well are the blandness of certain passages. Like, it's
which is annoying because, like, the bits that stand out for me are like the, like, in stem, long stem, like that drum that comes in, it's just like really, really fast, like sort of kick and snare, and then it just like cuts out. And it's like stuff like that you wouldn't ever hear in a shitty bar that just plays, you know, crappy. Mm.
Yeah, no, I like it. That stuff's
so many exciting
not
bits in this.
Yeah. That stuff's too challenging.
Yeah, exactly. And then
B-roll.
Yeah.
I thought it's right. Like, I would say some of the songs are probably too long, but on the other hand, like, the songs evolve. Like, you can see he's got an idea that he's getting towards with each song.
Yeah.
It's like a suite almost, you know, which your mileage may vary on that. Like, you might not necessarily think that's a good thing, because it can be frustrating as well, I think.
It's a pretty downbeat album as well. I mean, I read that the guy was pretty, you know, pretty depressed at the time of making it, and like when he was like, somebody, was it techno anxiety or something like that, he described as being the theme, like the musical theme, but supposedly said that even he feels it's quite downbeat in retrospect. I mean, how does it compare to his later work? Because this was his first full album, right?
This is his first full record
as a total novice.
He did some work with Cut Chemist. He's done a lot of stuff with him. He had like a full sort of extended edition and like second disc of this that came out with like loads of random clips. But I think his second record, Private Press, is actually underrated. It doesn't quite have the, like, the warmth of this. The warmth, it doesn't have like that, you know, for instance, just the sound of the record needle, you know, the going all the way
more
through.
More polished, yeah.
It is slightly more polished, and it's maybe got some more like overtly heavy hip hop, you know, beats in it, and some weird, like, it's got Simon and Garfunkel samples in it and stuff like that. But I really, really like that album, actually.
Simon and Garfunkel is pretty heavy.
Oh, I mean, absolute heft. But
he's moved away from the sound a lot in his career. Like, I think he deliberately moves quite far from it because people will hold it in such high regard, and he knows that.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have a way to recreate that.
There's parts in the second record that are like just this expanded, you know, taking that sort of the acoustic guitar-y bits with, you know, hip hop drum beats. But then when that third record came out, The Outsider featured just loads and loads of guest singers and hip hop artists, and to me it was just an absolute total mess. And I don't think it's gone down well historically either. And like, he's obviously a very talented you know, turntablist and mixer and stuff like that, and that's what he was kind of doing on that record. But
he made a rod for his own back with his first album, basically.
Yeah, that's it. He doesn't want to, and it's like, you know, fair play to him, he doesn't want to go and sort of repeat what he knows he's good at and, you know, play at the crowd. But I've never been in.
Why don't artists just stop? I got to say, this is one of the things that's probably, and I've got a lot of peeves. You know that. You can vouch for that. Mm-hmm. I've got a lot of peeves. One of my top three would be, why don't more musicians just fucking stop?
I think that's something.
You know what I mean? It's just like, when they've said everything they've got to say, or that it's just not coming anymore. Why? I mean, I get that it's about income. I get that it's about status. I get that, but
it's also very difficult to have that, like, context, like to see it
objectively.
Yeah. Like, if you're making, you don't know if you've made a classic record. You can only read the fucking reviews, so you don't know when you made a shit record. Like,
five years into making, you know, the next great comeback record, you know, it's like, Jesus, Weezer, shut up. You know, it's like why don't, like, it is frustrating because, you know,
people still buy it.
Same
reason
else.
Like people still make fucking superhero and comic book films.
Don't get me wrong,
because
though.
People still go to the cinema and spend 12 quid a ticket on it.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. Sorry, I'm
it's not the artist's fault.
It's a bit of a rhetorical question. I get why people are motivated to continue with a project, but it is incredibly frustrating when it diminishes their earlier catalogue when they go on to make increasingly redundant music for audiences who are, as they get older, for various reasons, less and less and less invested in the music and simply going through the motions of, oh, hey, there's a new album coming out. And by the way, there's probably a fair few bands we were going to touch on in the course of this that are guilty of this.
There's very few and it's that like, managed to have any longevity.
It's like, folks, go and do something else. Change the name, get a new project, get a couple new folk in, freshen it up, you know, and leave this as a nice thing. You know, do the decent thing and say, that's run its course,
just
that was nice.
Kurt Cobain and... blow your fucking head.
There's more than a few bands should have done that. Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
I think the drive to keep creating, it's just in a person, isn't it? And you just want to keep doing it.
Is it? I don't know, man. I don't know if the drive to keep creating is it. I think it's more the drive, the thirst for relevance and the thirst to be, it's like the film, the show Extras, it's like the thirst to be able to walk into a restaurant and get a table. There's so many people get so used to being, you know, giving guesties and getting all that kind of shit that eventually they just can't give up their band or they need to get the band back together because nobody cares who they are anymore.
Yeah, but if you've been in a band since you were 14 and you got your first record deal when you were 18 and you released that album when you were 20 and you've been touring and maybe you've spent 15 years and your relevance has gone down, that's your life. That's all you know. It's like being a footballer. If you started being a footballer when you're 14,
you don't go back to playing football when you're 48.
No, you become a football pundit, or you become a
You become really depressed.
So do something else.
You don't know how to do it.
I think that's the opposite argument there. It's like you don't just try and keep recreating what you were recreating with diminishing returns. You say,
but like when you're a footballer, your legs go, so you can't be a footballer. If your legs didn't go, you'd keep being a footballer. Well, a musician, your legs don't go, you just like. You lose that spark. But
tell me anybody other than Chris Rea who's remained relevant. I mean, I don't buy it. I get the logic.
No, I completely agree. But like, what I'm saying is, you're never going to have.
It's tragedy, man. It's pure tragedy. And like 90% of the cases, it's pure tragedy. It's totally like Extras. It's him trying to get into a restaurant and them saying, "Oh, I'm sorry, we don't have your name down. Oh, but we need to get the band together again." I mean, look at all the... Now we're just living in an era of perpetual reunion tours.
Nostalgia.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, DJ Shadow, I don't know. I'm just asking you guys here. But if he's never made anything as relevant, like, wouldn't you just stop and be like, I'm going to do something else, get another moniker, maybe work with someone else and call it something else, you know?
The thing in this case is, though, like, he didn't... When he created this record, he wasn't trying to do anything, and he's still not trying to do anything. He's just making the music.
Yeah, he's just an individual. It's not like he's a band with a concept. He's just a guy.
Let's stick a cork in this, right? You guys like it. I don't. And I don't fall out with it. I think it's competent. I think to really appreciate it, I would have needed to get in it nearer the time. And I think it's sullied by its own legacy. And that's not its fault, but I find it really hard to separate that personally.
I think that's like I said earlier on, I think that's a common thing for people. Like, that happens to a lot of people when it comes to records, that you can't deny time.
Yeah.
And you can't change the space of time between when it came out and now.
You can't deny time.
Wow.
It's true though.
It is true. I fucking love this album.
I like it a lot too. I like that it does stuff that hip hop still doesn't do. Really. A lot of big hip hop doesn't do. Mm-hmm. It's got a leitmotif running throughout. The attention to production and detail is immense, like totally incredible. And people try to recreate it and they don't. And there's some great DJs out there who do the same thing, like R2 DJ, mm-hmm. RJD2, and DJ Format and all that kind of thing. Like they do similar things and they're really fucking good at it, the instrumental hip hop thing. But there's lightning in a bottle with this record, and I don't even think he realised it was happening. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why he's not trying to recreate it either.
Yeah.
You know?
I as I said, I'm completely indifferent to it. It's not a slight. I didn't mind it, but it didn't push any buttons whatsoever.
Yeah.
Well,
that's fair.
I can see that as well. I can understand that argument because it can be. I mean, you're particularly into hip hop. Is hip hop a big thing you're into? You just said you're the whitest guy ever. So
Dave's laughing at that.
I take it the answer's no then.
No,
that's fair enough. I mean, if you're not into hip hop, this is like I said.
But is this hip hop? This doesn't sound like.
This is now the default hip hop sound. Like all this.
You were saying it isn't hip hop.
I don't think it was at the time.
It comes from a hip hop. It's a funny one. It comes from a very hip hop background because he is a hip hop guy, and then a lot of the sounds have been taken by the hip hop scene to be used as like sort of, you know, beats, etc.
It's got big beats throughout the entire thing, which is like a standard.
But standing on its own for me,
thing.
It's not a hip hop record. Mm. To me, it's an electronic record with like that touches on so many other genres.
Can I just point out that hip hop's a really silly phrase? Just the noise of hip hop, but because we're so used to it, we're just thrown in there.
Yeah.
A lot of guys are influenced by this record as well, and that's why it is the default hip hop sound for people who don't really.
See, now I can only hear that in the sentence.
I know.
Hip hop. Hip hop.
Well, I'm guessing you guys have been in.
I would like it to go in. Yeah. I would like it to go in. Mm-hmm. And Chris, you obviously wouldn't.
I'd use it to hold the door open. I wouldn't put it in.
You could use his record fucking collection to hold the door open. That must be immense. We'll hold the fucking vault door open. So I guess, are we going to talk any more about the actual record itself, or are we just going to like debate why it should be here?
I think people can just listen to the record and take it for themselves. For me, it's like, I've had so many train journeys home just listening to it and sort of falling asleep to it, or listening to it and like finding new things in it. And I mean, fuck, I've been listening to it for like 12 years. Mm. It's 20 years old now, and I still listen to it and find new little bits in it because it's so subtle. So yeah, it's just one of those ones that's a full perfect album for me.
I've got a feeling that if you haven't heard it before, you probably won't like it if you listen to it now, just because of the same reason this has. I think it'll be really difficult to connect with it. I love hip hop, so I don't even particularly like that kind of era of hip hop particularly, but this does stand out to me. Like, and there's a lot of things on it I love. Like, it takes the best out of G Funk sound, which is like the big Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg thing at the time. Mm-hmm. That was why hip hop stocks in 96, that kind of thing. Golden Steam from A Grain of Salt as well is like the standout track for me. It's just a banger.
Yeah, I've seen him live a few times, and that's the one that when he plays it, everybody
it goes off, man. Yeah,
normal.
Yeah. So if you dig it, you'll dig it, and if you don't, then I don't think it'll be hard to get into. But listen to it anyway. And then,
given
and
that we're
then vote,
assessing the underground, or given that we're ostensibly assessing albums that are maybe a little under-recognised, it's probably worth pointing out that I think Time Magazine had this in their top 100 of all time.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily underrated, and in my personal opinion, I don't think it's underrated. Mm-hmm. So if that was the question, do you think this is underrated? No.
Yeah, but should it be going on a list of great albums? Yeah.
And
some people it already is. So.
Yeah.
Ours is definitive though. I mean, that's the spiel. Ours is the fucking one. Our list is the fucking list.
That is an issue.
So I guess we have decided. We've not decided. We've kind of disagreed a little bit on this one. So
it's healthy.
It's healthy. This is the name of the game, isn't it?
Yeah,
this is why we do it. It's not like it's the first time we've done it either. So let us know if you like it or not. Go and vote on our Facebook page. If you want it to go in, if you don't want it to go in, it's totally up to you. So yeah, I guess we move on to the next record next week. So what is next, Chris?
Oh, Mr. Beast by Mogwai.
Mogwai. Mogwai.
I have a lot to say about that record.
Yeah, this could be a bumper episode, man.
Yeah, so looking forward to that one. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure, as ever.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, hiccup.
It is happening again.